All right, as I said, the seventh year ending in our issues in our contemporary world, the flood, the Grand Canyon. Go for these original panels. Remember, there are four phases in Brown's presentation. We're now focusing on the last phase, and particularly the Grand Canyon formation in a matter of weeks. See, it's in the recovery phase of the flood. Mr. Brown puts it a little bit later than following on the heels of the flood, a little bit later than the runoff period of the flood, puts it a little bit later. So we have a picture from Sam, and I copied this out of our bulletin this last Sunday in case you didn't read it. It is interesting that those who accept the record of the Bible do have a well-thought-out mechanism for forming the Grand Canyon that does not resort to endless string of miracles. And we believe in them, miracles. Whereas the philosophical scientists must rely on a string of endless natural miracles for the Grand Canyon's formation. Isn't that interesting? They're the ones that really believe in the miracles. And we don't necessarily need to believe in miracles for the Grand Canyon to be formed. We just need to have normal physics law set in motion. Okay, so our abstract for these two lessons are, we intend to show a plausible scenario that water from the global flood was the eroding mechanism for what appears as the great washout. There are two things that are necessary. First of all, we need a massive amount of water. Certainly, the flood provides that. We also need a high elevation of the water that needs to descend, and when it does that, it washes things out. So we have the necessary water from the deep, provides 4,000 feet of water over the surface of the earth. Yet what is necessary is a temporary, I found out a good word for that, it's called ephemeral. Are you impressed? I'll use it later, so now you know what it means. A temporary impoundment of water, then a rapid release of the water to perform hydroaction on the sedimentary layers in the canyon. We need impoundment of water, and then it's released. We need a temporary lake with massive water. How do you find it? Well, you follow the Colorado River upstream. Now, this is a satellite look, and remember we took a peek underneath the satellite picture and saw, rolled the cameras back 4,000 years some, perhaps, and we have drawn on our map a lake. It's now an imaginary lake. We would now call it a dry lake. If you've been in this area of Utah, southeast part of Utah, you will see all the formations there, and the first thing that comes to your mind is, I think this place has been underwater sometime. And if you've been at the four corners, you can be informed that if you were standing at the four corners during this time, you'd be underwater. If you were up in the Black Canyon of Colorado next to the San Juan Mountain Range, and I just figured out today that Telluride must be on the west side of this range, and Ouray must be on the west side of this range. If you've ever been there, we've done a jeep ride over that pass called Bear Pass. Because you can't get across, you got to go way around it. So I think that is the ridge.
They had to build a 162-mile railroad to get around.
Is that right?
Because they couldn't get from.
Okay, so that is the plateau, the Colorado Plateau Eastern Ridge. I figured that out tonight just looking at it. I bet you that's where that is. Isn't that the strange thing when you drive around and you drive at your 6-foot level in your car and you look at stuff that's so big you have no idea what you're looking at? But if you know what to look for, then it makes some sense, like this just did for me.
Don, where would Grand Junction be?
Grand Junction is right up here. I think it's probably a little bit off the map. This is the Black Canyon. Have you any been to the Black Canyon? Okay. It's kind of all out of the way and not easy to get to. We stopped there for a couple hours and didn't hike or anything, but drove down the canyon for a ways. So that all would have been underwater. So we get up into here. This is up here in the Green River area where my little fossil came from. That's where this is. These are also cliffs out here. And we have, is it Cedar City? Cedar City, I think that's what it's called. Out here, and these cliffs over here are called Grand Wash Cliffs. And these others have names too later on that I'll maybe show you, but that's not the point of our lesson. Just want to get you an idea of being oriented where we are. Lee's Ferry is here. This is the mouth of the Marble Canyon. The Colorado River dumps, you know, it comes across from here, comes from up here, down this way, and into the Grand Canyon, and out to the Gulf of California. I want to note, and we'll talk about the Petrified Forest Park, all underwater. And I'd say, duh. Yeah, all underwater.
Down like the Arches National Park.
Yes, yes. It's, isn't that called in Monument Valley? Yeah. Hester Teal, you probably have to help me a little bit.
Canyon?
Canyon Land, right. Sometimes this is called the Canyon and Lake.
Okay. Down where's Lake Powell?
It starts right here and goes up this way. Lake Powell would be just a low elevation of that lake. Well, they've rebuilt, they put a dam in there now in the 30s. I think 30s. Okay, so Salt Lake is up here. Highway was 15 comes along here, and 70 is up across the top here. Okay. So, they call this thing I'm going to look at a funnel. And I know how a funnel works. We lived on the farm, and we had tractor fuel, and we didn't have such things as electric pumps. We'd put tractor fuel into the tractor tank with a funnel. So that's from the big to the small hole. That's called a funnel. This is from a small hole to a big hole. That's not a funnel. That's a flume. And this guy keeps calling it a funnel. You're looking down the wrong end of the funnel. So it's a flume. So I call it a flume for the fun of it. All right, so here's a same. Whoops, sorry. Back up. Hey, you know what I can do now? I don't want to do that. All right, I want to do this. All right. This is the same map we just saw, except the lake started here and then went off this way. Here's Lake Powell, you asked about. Lee's Ferry, and this is Marble Canyon. This dumps into the Grand Canyon. The Little Colorado River is here. The Colorado River is up here. We have two cliffs. This is called Vermilion Cliff. It's supposed to have one L, and it does. And Echo Cliff. Oh, that's a nice idea. Vermilion Cliff and Echo Cliff. That's nice. Then we have the East Kaibab Up Warp. And this is where the north rim of the north rim is. If you go to see, look from the north rim. This is the south rim with the Grand Canyon Village. This is the desert view, and that looks out into this plains area. We'll have a picture of that in a minute. All right, so we want to talk about this section right here, I think. It's like that's the river, and that's the spot we want to talk about. I want to show you some pictures. This is looking at the flume. North is to our right. That works for you too. Left is, south is to your left. Now we have the Vermilion Cliffs, are these cliffs. On top of this is called the Pariah Plateau. And maybe it's more towards this end, but I've seen it listed that way. And what I want to show you here is we have a 2,000-foot rise of washed out rock as it is now. And it's difficult to see this, but there is a cut in this bed through here. And that's the Marble Canyon, and under at the bottom of the Marble Canyon is the Colorado River. So you walk out there and think you could just hike across that. Well, I'm afraid you won't get across because you have this to look at. This is looking towards Page, which is north, and that's that slit you see. And if you're going to and I would love to do this, you call tube down, what's the word to do, raft down the Colorado River, you would come through this spot because this is a bridge across the Colorado River that takes you west or east, the only bridge there is. In fact, there's two bridges now. All right, so we have that. We're looking towards Page, Arizona. Just a little closer look at these cliffs. I want to show you something really interesting. Now, these are sandstone rock cliffs. And I'll say this later in another slide. So these are supposed to have been there for millions of years. If they were there for millions of years, would you not think that there might be a little bit, this is called talus. Would you not think there would be a little more talus have come off the rock face? In fact, they say if the world was around as long as they say it has been, the world would be flat. Because it all would have washed flat. So at millions of years, making these little piles of talus, okay, argues against long time here. We're talking a very short period of time here. Even at 4,000 years, you kind of think, wow, that's not very much for 4,000 years, is it? So we have, again, talus that doesn't hardly even show up here. Now, there's a slope here. I'll give you an explanation for that in a minute. So I call it the talus report. Does not require millions of years. All right, so we have in this, there's a name for it. I've been wanting to call it the Taibab Plateau, but I'm not sure it is. I think there's another name for it, and I can't find out what it is. So whatever the floor of this valley is, this flat valley, we find something amazing. As the water runs to the south, which is opposite my tail here, goes this way, it runs south, it goes deeper. Obviously, water runs downhill. But this Marble Canyon ridge goes up 1,000 feet. So they've told me, and I've seen it on pictures, if you're in a raft going down the river, you think you're going downhill or uphill, whichever it is, and it's the opposite because of the stratus that are fighting you, your descent. It makes it look like you're going uphill. So, okay, so we have this unusual phenomenon going on, and back over here are this is the uplift of the Kaibab Plateau. It's upwarp, and that forms the rim of the canyon. Now, I think if this isn't a Kaibab Plateau, used to be at the same elevation as this. You see, there's been a change. You know, you can see this is higher. Just looking at it, you can tell that. Another little peek at talus. Very little rock runoff or fall off the talus from these rocks up here. Now, if there's a few laying down here, right? Remember, 4,000 years of time, you think it's hardly enough for that. And you think about millions of years, it's really impossible. Now, we have an interesting thing, too. Above this line, we have washed, rough sedimentary layers, which indicates fast-moving waters. So in other words, it's kind of hard, soft, hard, soft, hard, soft. So when the water runs by, it takes out the soft parts and leaves these little layers. But when you get down to the bottom here, lower part, you don't see that. You know, just kind of like rock that's been kind of worn smooth. That's not talus. That's just the way it is. So we have fast-moving water on the top and slow-moving water at the bottom, which is the way it always is. Okay, so we're looking at the Vermilion Cliffs there again, towards Lee's Ferry. Lee's Ferry is where you get on to go down the Colorado River. Now, this, I think, is a satellite picture, and it shows this flume. And this used to have overburden. I don't know if that's the right word for it. It's for mining. You take off the upper dirt, and then you expose the coal. That's called overburden. So I'm going to call this the overburden. It's been removed here. We set up to 2,000 feet. So as the overburden is removed, the flat floor arches and splits along the canyon axis. All right, there's your Marble Canyon, Colorado River at the bottom of it. Now notice, these barbs are backwards from normal feeder rivers. Don't they always go downstream? I mean, just look. Can you see these up here? Yeah, see, those feed downstream. But these feed upstream. Let me explain why, if you don't already have it figured out. Who's got it figured out? Good, good, good. That's good. That's really good. Go on with the Barb Canyons. All the sedimentary sand, the stone, was formed in saturated conditions. The floodwaters partially suspends grain of material. Think of it as quicksand at first, then it gets solider, but there's a lot of water in quicksand. The saturated rock becomes a source of water directly after the flood runoff. So this is all saturated sandstone. The saturated rock becomes a source of water directly after the flood runoff. As a flume is formed, now we have a little bit of a conflict here, I do, because when is the flume formed? The sooner it is after the flood, the more water is going to come out. The longer you wait, the less there's going to come out. Although I think there's always going to be some come out because it's going to be considered trapped water. Where can it go? It can't go deep, so it's got to stay high. So it just sits parked. So as the flume is formed, whenever that is, the floor rises, cracks, the water as springs begins to drift toward the vacancy. I call this the vacancy. The new earth crack in the Marble Canyon. Since the floor rises to the south, rises this way, the water naturally would flow which way? The other way. Aha! That's why we have these barbed canyons. So it flows from the hill north, thus forming these backward, awkward-looking barbed canyons. That shows you that just the shape of the floor has changed. Now, in one of these canyons, another interesting piece of evidence for this is, call it field observation, you get these technical words here. Field observation means you just go out and look. Maybe you might even take a note or two. Field observations on this side of the canyon feeding the Marble Canyon support the idea of a saturated sandstone as the first condition after the flood. This is sandstone, saturated with water. As the water leaches out, huge amounts of it is trapped in these stones, making seeping channels first. What's it doing? Seeping channels first, and then streams, which carry the smaller or dissolved particles away. The larger, stronger layers hang together, as we see here, and they morph, change their shape, and sag onto the canyon floor. So you have all these looking like fish scales. Now these would have been at some time flat, straight across. But somehow, apparently, those are able, you know, over a long period of time, but a slow process, I'm trying to say, they get eroded and they sort of just kind of slide down. Otherwise, how in the world do you explain such a look? So there we have a nice picture of the flume and the Vermilion Echo Cliffs, the Vermilion Cliffs over here, Echo Cliffs on this side. When you drive from Page, you'll drive along Echo Cliffs. And you make a hairpin turn down, you come back this way, and you cross this plain, cross the bridge, and you come back this way, and you go on over into the North Rim if you want to. Or this is where Lee's Ferry picks up their people, and we see some of those canyons that have smooth, washed out. It's in the Pariah Canyon, that what Sam called it, the wave formation. There's some of those are here. There are other places, too.
Is that water running south now?
Yes, it is. It's to my left, your left. But it's going uphill, if you look at the land. Yeah, you got that. One of my sharpest students. We're going to move to another subject. Petrified forest. Remember, we saw where they were. If you forgot, we'll look at it again. Petrified forest is down here in the lake, in the Hopi Lake. Don't need to spend time explaining where that is. You get it. If you've been to a petrified forest, you'll be surprised how much petrified wood there is. But a lot of it's gone. And before 2009, before 1906, where do those numbers come from? Before 1906, train loads of petrified wood was removed before it was protected national park. There are jungle-sized trees over 100 feet high, and I don't know how high they are, because when the smaller part of the branch tree gets petrified, it tends to get broken off and it's gone, so you don't know how high they were. But they easily could have been 100 feet high. That's a tall tree. This park is in the Hopi Lake region, formerly underwater. Petrified wood forms when you look at it real crossly. No. Under strict conditions, rich mineral water saturates the wood. It's like it's laying in the lake of rich mineral water. Rich mineral water would be like silicon. Dissolved minerals, they precipitate into the tiniest voids in the wood cells. Water rich with the silica forms quartz when the silica is forced into another state by cooling. And then it comes out out of the saturate stage into a solution and becomes quartz. I mean, it goes from something to another and it becomes a permanent condition, which is what you have with the... Oh, I was going to bring some of those along. I have some of those at home. I have one that's this big. And that big. And no one in our family wanted it. You know, and my parents were downsizing or they died. I forget how it was. But we had this piece of petrified wood left. And I said, I want it. And I still have it. It's in my front entrance. Oh, that's a special thing. Now, you can't take it from the park, but you can buy it around the park. So, I mean, just because you have it doesn't mean you're a crook.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
Well, I don't know where my mom got it. I would not be a bit surprised, she said to Dad, would you stop over here a little bit? Let me pick up, you know, something for the kids. This is back before, she died in 72, so it'd been long, that was before there was even people on Earth. All right, so this is at the south end of the petrified park, and got my wife to stand there and give me some scale to this log, which at the base looks to be from here to here, and that's part of the root, that's 8 feet. And I don't know how long it is because these are, you know, very thick here. That's 5 feet, I would say. And the top of it is gone, like I say. And these things are very fragile. They're just like brittle stone. They break along, what do you call it, crystals, lines of crystals. So you have these huge, huge petrified pieces. And here's one that's laying down. That's a good idea. It goes from here, I think. I mean, I'm not even sure that's the beginning of it, but it goes clear to here. So I laid out some pieces according to the height of the man, and that's 77 feet long, and it looked like it could go quite a ways longer yet. And these are not one or two. These lay all over the place. And that's after my mom got done with them. I see now you get a little card and you go there and you see, if you see somebody picking up something, you're supposed to write down the license plate number and what you saw them do and what they took, and then you're supposed to send it in. Are we in the mafia state or something? Not that I think they should pick up stuff, but reporting on your fellow citizens, I don't know.
Sean, to make yourself feel better, if it's on private property, I think they
can. Yes, I've said you can own it, but you can't pick it up here.
In fact, they say they can find it in alleys in town there.
Yeah. So if you get off the plantation there, you can get your own rock. Okay. Now here's a pile of limestone, and I'll give you a close-up, but these are petrified trees sticking out of the sides. Sedimentary limestone captured. They were, first of all, floating, and then as they get saturated with the silica, it turns to quartz. They get heavy, and they start sinking. And no doubt at some time that was the bottom of the lake, and some others are higher up. So they didn't all just sort of get caught in suspension and stay there. No, they were at that time where they were formed. Then more piled on top of them. So we have the stacking up of sediment from this lake, and these fossilized trees, they stick out of the side of this one. Here's a little closer shot of it. These are trees. You see, these have fallen off. They end up being about that long, like this, depending on how big diameter they are, about square, and that's about when they break. So today, floating log will not petrify, is that a good word? But will eventually disintegrate. Petrification occurs when hot water is saturated with silica, cools, forcing the silica to quartz. The silica has been absorbed into the wood cells. As the log cools, petrification occurs. Today, lakes are too cool and have little silica. Therefore, petrification cannot happen. It may happen in the laboratory, but not in the natural wild. And somebody made a point about, is this nice that we know how it forms? Because otherwise, we would say these are millions and millions and millions of years in the making. I appreciate that. I don't know. Oh, now you want me to drop it. Thanks, Larry. You're so helpful. All right. Logs on the hillside. So why petrification here? Now, I might say that, did you know there's petrified wood in every state of America? Even in Nebraska? I don't have any of my from, but I heard that we, even in Nebraska, we have petrified wood. So remember, water and silica and hot water over time and wood gets petrified wood. So it's not that difficult a recipe. Why here? Well, one reason may be that at this tail end of the water of the lake, the tail waters region of the lake, the discharging velocity would be slower, runs out slow here, faster up here where it reached, leaving the floating trees behind to petrify after the floodwaters. Other petrified wood, which is fragile, could have been broken up in the runoff. So that is so fragile, if it was smashed up at all, I mean, dealt with harshly at all, it would just fall into pieces. So maybe that's where a lot of it went, elsewhere in the world. But here, it was preserved because of the lake. Well, I don't know if I asked this question to begin with, but I think it's a famous kind of quotation that happened. And I actually found it in a church blog in Calvary Baptist in Irving, Pennsylvania. When coming to the Grand Canyon, one of the most frequently asked questions is, how did it occur? Consider the answer given by John Hance. In 1883, Hance became the first person of European descent to live at the canyon. He was one of the canyon's most colorful personalities, tour guides, and explorers. Children loved John Hance, and to them, he always explained how the canyon came into being. He says, I dug it, he would say. And the story worked well for years until a four-year-old girl asked seriously, where did you put the dirt? And that's a good question. Even the Colorado River, the mighty Colorado River, doesn't have an answer for that. I showed this to you a couple of weeks ago. No, it had to be last week. Last week, this is the delta from the Colorado River. Now you say, that's a huge delta. But look in the map over here. It's that little dot. Not the circle. The little black dot in there. So in the scale of the Baja Peninsula, the California Gulf, it's hardly anything. I would say this is probably no bigger than the Mississippi Delta. Have you ever looked at that? And it's one of the reasons we know that the world couldn't have been around for a long time, because the deltas are small. It takes a while for these deltas to form. And see how deltas form? They make these little, they branch off. This one hasn't branched off too much yet. There's a branch there. And another flood might come along and might get another branch, but that's how they work. Well, this doesn't anywhere near account for the sedimentary runoff from the Colorado River. So we go to the next slide. Get these numbers. These are huge numbers. We got 2,000 cubic miles of dirt plus 800 cubic miles of dirt, rock, sandstone, whatever. 2,800 cubic miles of dirt. Been moved. 2,000 cubic miles from the denudation, denudation, which we'll discuss in a minute, and 800 from the Grand Canyon only. So where is all this topsoil? This denudation is the stripping of the topsoils, I'll tell you how much, and just swept away, all right? And then beside that, we have the Grand Canyon, the two things that have happened. Where is it? Well, it's in the Gulf of California, but not as a delta. We saw the dot. But as part of 6,000 cubic miles of sediment is more than 3,000 cubic miles of sediment that we're trying to dispose of. So 6,000 miles of sediment and material in the northern basin alone. It's in 15,000 square miles in this area. So we're looking at this round area called the northern basin. This area is where that sediment, runoff sediment is. The basin has a flat bottom. No eroded channels like we saw in the Delta, or fans like the Mississippi, because it is a settling basin, an area for sedimentary erosion, or erosion from sediments from erosion. Maybe that's not said right. All this is evidence for vast erosion with suspended particles in water, which were quickly distributed and settled as in a tank of any tank to form a level bottom of the Gulf. Just came, the water was filled up, it sat there. It's not a river, doesn't go anywhere. It just sat there and lowered, and we have this 6,000 cubic miles of sediment down there. So that's where it went, Susie. Okay, now there was a question there. Got 20 minutes. Okay, all right. We're doing pretty good. We might make it tonight. Okay, the uniformitarianism, those are the evolutionists, have called this the removal, the Great Denudation. 1882. Everybody's called Clarence during those days. Clarence Dutton observed how, now accepted as fact, that 2,000 cubic miles of rock, Mesozoic, has been swept off of 10,000 square miles of fairly flat Kaibab hard limestone, which is the base. It was swept off on top of that. When it got down to that, it quit doing it. Now, see, this is all accepted because I gave you those figures before. See, even Mr. Brown accepts that. This had happened before the Grand Canyon was formed, which removed another 800 cubic miles of rock. So they got the 2,800 cubic miles of rock. The top of the Kaibab Plateau is hard limestone, 350 feet thick. You stand on the top of the Grand Canyon, anywhere, you'll be standing on the Kaibab Formation, even though it's not all level, because we've had an uptick, an upwarp. So here's an exaggerated view of this upwarp. Think of this used to be flat. Again, this is exaggerated. So it says that this upthrust occurred after the continental crash, going by Brown's theory, after the continental crash piling up the Rocky Mountain range, which settled and forced adjacent areas upward to the 6,500 feet that it is. Plus, we have the thickness of the denudation layer estimated to be 1,000 to 10,000 feet. Now, that is unbelievable. I've seen as high as even as like 3 miles. It's beyond me to think of 300 miles of sedimentation swept off our continent anywhere. But that's what they're claiming. Now, I'm going to show you this big little chart broken up because you can't see anything here, right? But I want to show you that it starts, this is a Grand Staircase. And we have things like the Zion National Park. We have Bryce Canyon up here. We have Kanab, Utah down here. We have Jacob's Corner here, just on the way to the North Rim. And the Grand Canyon is this slot. So this is what I'm going to show you in three sections. So why they say these big numbers. I don't know why he gets wild, homie. Settle down. Okay, well, we have 6,000 feet going down to sea level here. Then he wants to go another 6,000 feet up to 12, which brings you to this point. Okay? That's why they get the 6,000. Now, Mr. Brown, settle down. Mr. Brown uses 1,000 feet. I'm not sure why. Is he a little afraid of that big number? I don't know. But the Kaibab, which is the top of the Grand Canyon, is this layer down here. See how deeply it's buried? It's buried 6,000 feet. So this is the part that's been washed off, according to the theory. Now we look at this, we see, all right, we talked about the Vermilion Cliffs that swing around. The Colorado River comes down the canyon. Kanab, that's a town. And you drive this way over into, Page. And I think when we drove last year, must have come down here with the car. There's roads there. Didn't realize where we were. I got a lot of pictures of this, though. I looked at them yesterday, so I wonder what these mean. But anyway, here you have that, this yellow one, I think, the Kaibab Plateau. Go to the next slide. And there it is. See, it follows on up, like an upwharf. So here you're standing on this Kaibab Plateau with this very hard limestone, and this has been carved down as the Grand Canyon. You sort of get the idea of what the Great Denudation is. It starts there, and it sweeps south and east. I don't know. Somebody asked last week, where does it stop? I don't think it stops. It just sweeps it all off. Then I asked, well, what happens on the east side of this thing? Like we have, like where Highway 15 is up. You go from Las Vegas up to Salt Lake, that little line. What happens to the west of that? So this question I have in my mind, too. Why did this little ridge get left, if that's what was left? Okay, any question about this? The denudation, understand what it is? It's a massive amount of dirt got washed into the Pacific or the Atlantic, depending on which theory you take. It's always good to know when you shouldn't ask a question. I forgot to put a picture in there. I could skip this, but I have it in here. I'm going to look at it. All right. There is a... Let's see if I can go next picture. The Red Butte is what you're looking at here. And you might say, well, now that's the top of this denudation level. In other words, everything's from here down was stripped off. No, it's up here. Like maybe even up here. And this is left because it has a hard layer in it. And again, why do these things get left in the middle of big plain like this is hard to say. But we're standing, the next picture that I was showing you is going to be standing on this thing looking that way. That way. So use your imagination a little bit. Won't hurt you. Whoop, wrong way. So now we're looking at that Red Butte. We're looking toward the north, northeast. And we see, to me it's not that impressive, but the point pointing out that this goes down and this is going up. I got to think about that a little bit. But this is that part that's been denuded, been stripped. And it's as flat as a pancake. Well, as far as we can tell. So we go back to that. Oh, by the way, the Colorado River, this is taken from that Desert Inn Tower that's at the eastern edge of the Grand Canyon. If you get in from Highway 89, which runs this way down to Flagstaff and up here to Page. So you get off there and you come in this way and you see the little Colorado River comes in right close to that desert tower. I don't know if my mouse doesn't settle down. Okay, now here's the Kaibab limestone that we talked about, which is the top of the Grand Canyon. And then we have basalt, which is rock from volcanoes and other things that have been washed off everywhere else, but not here. So now look at this flat plain, washed clean of all the dirt. All right, now we have, I think this is where I want to introduce my last thing here. Well, I'll do it here. There is another theory about how this formed. And the theory is that this Colorado River washed, this is an uplift here, this is high here. This is 1,000 feet higher on this side than it is on this side. Remember we had that big hill? I said its scale was out of adjustment. Well, the theory goes that somehow that Colorado River just worked its way through that hill. That's right. Now, I'll say a little more about it later, but I just want to say that to you now. Because we have a low spot here. That's what these arrows represent. And a low spot here, that water would have easily run around this hill, this knob. But it didn't do that. It ran through the hill. Now, we believe in miracles. I don't think God's performing one here, making water run uphill. So there had to be some other force factor here, which I am not acquainted with or aware of. Just want to show you this, that these plains or these plateaus have vertical faults in them. Okay? So this at one time all would have been flat. Remember, this uplift came from when the Rocky Mountains settled, how many thousands of square miles that is. And it is even shown that that lower undisturbed surface of the inner core, for what they call it now, that we call the basement rock, was even depressed at this point. So the mountains, this plateau went up, and the basement rock went down, had to have something pushed into it to do the work. So I think he's on pretty good ground here, if I'm taking his word for what he's reporting. So this is a cross-section then of, this is a cross-section just taken kind of like through here. And so you have these arrows are corresponding to these spots. Now, if you're going to visit there, you'd like to have some of the stuff in your hands and say, now we're doing this and we're going over here. So sitting in class like this is kind of difficult. Well, Pete would make fun of me this morning. He said that, Don, I thought all those drawings were yours, and I found out they're in Brown's book. I was really hurt by that. So I had to draw a few of my own just to show you I can do it. Oh, I did this yesterday. I don't know. I didn't even bring these. But anyway, this is sort of a summary of the system that we've been studying. We have, first of all, floodwaters with flat sedimentary rock. And then we have the continental crash and the beginning of the Colorado Plateau rising, and we have some erosion of these materials. The denudation is starting, no doubt, and the plateau continues to rise, eroding materials to the south and west. So this gets pushed up. So finally, we have this pushed up so high that this water now is still high, but lower than here, and it runs down through this chasm. As it's lifted, it also splits open. And when you got a split open, you get a channel for the water to run through. Now, if there would not have been a denudation, we'd have had this kind of look. We'd have all this layer of rock over. It wouldn't have been rolling like that. It would have been flat. So anyway, that's what this is all supposed to show. There now, Pete, I can do it. I know. I have a pain. I worked on that for hours. So now, the grand staircase. The denudation occurred first. Now, either 1,000 feet, which you can see was only a part of that grand staircase, or 10,000 feet, which would be the staircase plus some more, what some think could have been. It swept the rock to the oceans. Depending on the theory of sheet drainage adopted, Brown would be heading off to the south and to the west, the Gulf of California. This is a much bigger event than the Grand Canyon. That's the thing that's interesting. The denudation is a whole lot more rock involved than the Little Grand Canyon, because we're talking about thousands of, 2,000 cubic miles, and we're just talking about the part that's around the Grand Canyon. We're not talking about the stuff that goes on south into Phoenix and south to the shores or to Mexico. So a lot. This is a much bigger event than the Grand Canyon, which is a mere 800 cubic miles. So this is all accepted pretty well by the creationists as the flood runoff event. The second event is the vertical cutting, which is called vertical cutting rather than horizontal sheeting. This vertical cutting of the Grand Canyon, a further erosion, this time characterizes the vertical one versus horizontal sweep action. The timing and the mechanism for this event is in dispute. Finally, we have a dispute. As I told you about the low parts around this Grand Canyon rim ridge, waters could have run on either side of it, but they didn't. Why not? I just brought this because this is really from the Green River Formation, but it shows what is projected as overburden that was got washed away. We're talking about 4,200 to 5,100 meters. Take that times 3 for feet. There you got your 15,000 feet there. Now, that's not over the Grand Canyon. It's over a little north, where the I-70 would cross below Salt Lake City. So, wrapping it up. We have said that knowledge about the science surrounding the flood event is a work in progress. Boy, I can sure say that. And likely would never be completed this side of glory. The same is true to a lesser scale, and therefore to a lesser extent, for the science of how the Grand Canyon was formed. Last week and this week, we presented the breached lake theories. There's the word ephemeral, the temporary lake theory, for the formation of the canyon. In this theory, lately, Walt Brown and others earlier, it's not he didn't come up with this fresh, others. Okay, the breached lakes, the breached lakes, were the Grand Lake or the Canyon Lake, we call it before, and the Hopi and others, occurred sometime after the flood. A little bit disputing here how much time after the flood, hundreds of years probably. Additional rain was a little bit problematic because it's not an area where it rains much. Leaves a little bit puzzled how that happened. Yet, so there is another model or theory we must mention. The formation of the Grand Canyon as phase two of a two-phase flood event. That's what I want to mention. First of all, we have flood event, the sheet drainage, the horizontal drainage. Water covered the earth, water flowed east. According to the earth's rotation, I guess the winds tend to flow out of the west, southwest in our country here, to the east, generally. Probably because of the rotation of the earth, so the water would do the same thing. But these waters are at high speed, 90 to 180 miles an hour, stripping down off the land, these thousands of feet of topsoil or top sedimentary material. As the waters abated, the monuments, mountains rose. And here I might say that I appreciate Walt Brown a little bit because he has a complete story of all the major events that happened during the flood stage. Some of the other guys, they deal with like this and say, well, the mountain rose because the continents were shifting. Well, answer the question, what made them shift? See, it doesn't leave you. Maybe they do it, but I haven't found it. I thought Whitcomb, in his book, The Genesis of the Flood, would address the Grand Canyon. It doesn't address it at all. I was going to try to get some help from him. I thought he might go back to this guy's idea. So according to him, the waters obeyed, the mountains rose, but before they rose, continents, we had the sedimentary mud, rain, volcano, and they would depend a lot on volcanic ash. So there's 40,000 volcanoes. And rather having the dirt come from the top 10 miles of Earth's crust in the ocean areas being blown out into the atmosphere and dropped back on Earth, he has them rain volcanic ash and dirt from the deep. That way, with 40,000 volcanoes, you can see that, well, that'd be quite a bit. They're not that many active today, but so that is one way he would get this sedimentary material up onto the continent. So while this was happening, the oceans were filling as runoff water continued in this process. In this action, they roost 6,000, 10,000 feet of debris to the east, south from the continents, forming the continental shelf, especially like in the Gulf of Mexico. So we have sheet draining makes few valleys. So we got to look for another mechanism that's going to cause the Grand Canyon. So he goes to second phase in this event. A closely followed event, he doesn't have years between this now, he doesn't have 100 years later, he says, as the water is abating, we have this one more thing happening, and that's forming of the Grand Canyon. Plus other places around the world that certain things like this happen. Closely followed event, part of the runoff phase of the flood is the vertical erosion. That's that cutting out slot. The flood waters run off to the east. Before the mountains were formed, the Kaibab Plateau rises. Again, we don't have any mechanism why this would occur. And that's what I leave myself a little bit with some questions, whereas Brown maybe doesn't have the right answers, but he at least poses a possibility how that happened. I said, sinking of the mountains and the rising of the plateaus around it makes some mechanical sense. The water drains to the west without any physical reason for it. To do so, it cuts through the Kaya Plateau platform, even though the lower flow channels do exist that the water does not seek. I showed you that what could have run around that little bump, but it didn't do that. Now, in all fairness to them, I've read their articles. They're in these wonderful, I really love this stuff. This is the quarterly Creation Research Quarterly, Creation Research Society Quarterly. They put out twice, four times a year. I know I'm a member because I thought I needed an article that was going to be in the next issue, which is this article, but it wasn't in the next issue. But I'm a member for a year, so I'm supposed to be in the next issue, I hope, and then I'll have it. But I may have to call you back for a recall and give you this last lesson yet. So this Creation Research Society Quarterly is running a five-part series. I have four of them here on the flood. Michael Orad is writing these, and he's a good guy. He's the climatologist. One is left to go, which will deal with the formation of the Grand Canyon, which, without resorting to the breached lakes theory. So I'm going to leave you that suspenseful thought that we don't know how they're going to answer it. And I got to say, they probably have a pretty good answer. They wouldn't be doing this if they didn't. So here's Monument Valley. What do you call it? Canyon Lakes Valley area? Looks like a former lake. I think these are wonderful pictures. You know this picture. This picture, you know that, recognize that from commercials? Well, Wanda and I came over the hill looking just exactly this way, and we came across this crest of the hill, and there were some Oriental kids, teenagers, whatever, young people, in the middle of the road. You know, kind of a little, whoa, what's going on over here? And then they quickly got off, they had a camera, and they quickly got off the road and said, what in the world is going on? And I looked up and I looked down the road and says, oh, they're taking a picture of this spot. And then I looked to see where I was. That's it. All right. I thought it was kind of funny. So these goosenecks in the San Juan River, you see quite a bit of this going on. These are fun pictures, so I won't test you on these. Can you tell me how you say this word here? Duché. Thank you. Dick, you were right. I told him it was French, and I said, probably not French, it's probably Spanish, because LL is silent in Spanish, right?
They used to say Canyon de Chile.
Yeah.
I said that at one of the information centers, and she laughed at me.
Duché. You know what language it is? It sounds French, because the D.
I guess it's got to be Indian, right from that
level. Well, since it had the D in front of it, it makes me think French. All right, so these are the formations I won't bore you with, but they are there for your looking. And we have the Wave Canyon formations. They're everywhere, everywhere in that area. I think some of them are really dangerous to go in because I think people have got lost and it can be life-threatening things. So thank you for your encouragement by attending. That's all I ask. I don't give tests. I don't take tips. We give you cookies, we make coffee, we're generally out on time, and all I ask you to do is come, and I do appreciate your faithfulness when you do. Okay, any questions in here while we wrap up? Hey, my pleasure. I wouldn't trade it. I hate getting ready. No, I love getting ready. I don't like to teach. That's how it is. Gil likes to teach, not get ready. I love the preparation. I love that part. I don't like the pressure to get ready for a certain hour. But then once you get it done, then it's kind of fun.
That Rocky National Park and the Long Lake boat, that dam, moved all that dirt out of that Panville fan area.
Down the Thompson Canyon, that one?
Well, it's inside the park where Long Lake was up top, and that moved all that dirt and then made that Anvil fan tore by the big metals.
Yeah, we're talking about the Big Thompson Canyon through there by Estes Park, west of Estes Park.
Well, it's inside the park.
Yeah, it's inside the park, right.
But I don't think it was the Big Thompson Canyon.
Now, water didn't go through there?
I mean, it has, but it did go through there. But when inside the park where you get the Bighorn viewing, and you go up the Fall River Road, the Anvil Fan.
Area. Okay, I think I know what the fan. I've been there.
Yeah, where it moved all that big old, put a big
right.
old trench.
There's boulders and stuff. Yeah.
Put a big old trench through there when that long that lake broke, so you can see how much dirt moved within hours.
Oh! I see
or
what you're
not
saying.
Even hours.
Yeah, moments. Yeah.
So,
one thing that's interesting. Nothing I could have brought, but you know, as these guys argue, what happened to the water, or which way did it go? You could tell which way the water went because the big rocks are dropped first, and the little rocks are dropped later. I mean, we're talking about across a state, that kind of distance. So that's what these guys do. They can look at these things, and I never thought about looking at the size of the rock. I mean, I got to look at all the rocks between here and Denver, you know, and see what size they are, see what's maybe what's telling me something. So that's how they do that. One of the ways they tell which way the water runs. All right, you've been good. I'm going to let you go, and I'll pray, and then you can take off. Lord, thank you for the season we've had together, Lord, for the joy we've had to start with creation and work forward in time to the events that we just complete tonight with the flood. Lord, we marvel at that which we do not know about these events, and yet your scripture is very clear that it did happen. And all of this, at least certainly the flood, because of the sinfulness of men that you sought wisely to destroy and restart with Adam's, with Noah and his family. Lord, in some ways it seemed like not done much better since then either. But Lord, we realize that we wait for a redemption that will be complete. Someday you'll come call us to yourself, and all the things we wondered about over these years about creation and everything else in theology, we maybe will have some answers that we would enjoy. Thank you for the scriptures you left us with, and it's certainly adequate, and it sure occupies our time, and it surely does feed our soul with the information that's in there. Thank you, Lord, for this local church that supports that scripture, that gives it its prominence that it needs to have, and it's being taught in classes and in homes and live in the lives of the people. So thank you for the year, the season we've had together, and just pray, Lord, that as we have a summer, that we might be honoring you. If we travel, keep us safe, Lord, and we have opportunity to witness, capitalize on it and use it for your good and your glory. Dismiss us now to our homes. Keep us safe as we go. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.